Hello, everybody. This is Clint Locklear. I'm up the FTA, and I've got Zagger in what my wife calls the Chester Molester van. It's getting pretty warm in here, so I don't know if we'll get a full hour. But I had a couple of guys yesterday that asked me to do another interview with him, so I saw him, and I have a declaration to make because there was some confusion between me and Zagger. I want everybody to know that I love Zagger. I'm not in love with Zagger. Big difference. But you thought that I was just, you didn't realize that my eyes are the way they were, and you thought that maybe I was just ignoring you, and I didn't know it was you.
You guys can't see this, but he's holding my hand right now. Like the last 2 years that I walked by your booth and saw you, I'd say, hey man, what's up? I tipped my hat to you, and you just looked at me and kind of grimaced like Johnny Thorpe used to do, man. Like, man, what's wrong? What'd I do to him, you know? And so I said something to Jeff Dunlap at the PTA. I said, what's going on with Locklear, man? Is he mad at me? He's like, man, I don't think so. And then Jeff said something to you, and he said, you said, no, man, there's nothing wrong. And here we are. So,
because the other day, I was like, is that Zagger? I could see a shape. And with the sun coming through the back window, it looks like I'm looking through fog.
You thought it was Hugh Jackman?
And I saw you nod, so I nodded because it's the polite thing to do.
Yeah, it happened here. You did the same thing. Dunlap already said to me that, nah, he's cool, man. Then I walked by and you did the same thing. I said, then when you explained to me that you couldn't see, you didn't recognize me, I'm like, now I get it. So here we are.
Yeah.
Love fest.
Okay, first question.
Yes, sir.
Explain why you don't want to have someone in Florida teach you to make an igloo.
Hey, I like that. That's a good lead-in. What he's getting at is I have a thing now, since the last time we talked, I started a little thing called Coyote U, and it's not at all original in that there's been a lot of schools for a long time. Heck, when I was, I got thinking about it, back in 1980, remember when Ray Milligan, mm-hmm. Jeff Kuhn Richter, is that how you say his last name?
And to do the motel thing?
Yeah, and I went to that as a young kid, which, you know, I think that showed even at a young age that I was willing to pay for lessons and learn, you know, but this is not at all original. Mark June approached me a few years ago to help him out with his school, and it was great, and I was flattered to be involved, but I had already had Coyote U in the works, and so, you know, I guess what I got going for me, and going back to your original question, is I'm, as of right now, probably the only guy in the true Northeast or East that's doing this in snow and rain and mud, and there's a lot of trappers in Pennsylvania and New York and Ohio and Vermont and New Hampshire, as you know, and some of the other schools, and I tell guys all the time, just like you, man, you've went to other people for help, and I tell people, go to whoever, just take lessons from somebody and take it from multiple people, but I guess if you live in the East and trap in the East, and you know, mine probably is a little more focused on that, and maybe makes a little more sense. It can be difficult, I think. When I was out with O'Gorman, man, we were on these stock dams and, you know, sagebrush flats and places that nothing like New York or Ohio or PA where I lived, and it takes a unique person that can really take that same thought process and put it into a hayfield in Michigan or New York or whatever, and we're supposed to, and we should, but I don't think everybody, especially a newer guy, can do that. So I think what I'm doing up there in New York plays into the hand a little better of a mm-hmm. of a true Eastern, Northeastern track, you know, East, where's that land start and stop, mm-hmm. you know, but you know, we get 300 inches of snow where I live annually. That's a whole different program than Texas or Kansas or Tennessee or wherever. So I think, you know, the numbers I've done over the years in the Northeast and New York, and then, you know, being kind of in that geographical type oddity, I think it kind of gives a unique, perhaps, approach, and maybe applies to some people more than others. But again, I'll never discourage anybody from going anywhere. Take them from whomever.
Well, I'm glad. See, I didn't know that you were doing your own, and like if you can ask Jeff this. I stay out of everybody's business because every time I get, you know, into stuff, there's always drama. So I'm like a hermit.
Understood.
When it comes. So people would call and go, you still doing the school? And I'll go, I think June and Zagger's doing something. I know June was. I think Zagger's doing something. I think it's in Texas. I'm not sure. And so now I know. So
yeah, right. You know, I guess to his credit, you know, he kind of, and your credit, I mean, you guys kind of dusted off that genre, for lack of a better word, but man, all of a sudden there's five or six or seven of these, and you know better than anybody, man, coyotes rule the world when people want to know about coyotes. Mm-hmm. My buddy Rusty Johnson, you know, from the June School, you know, they wanted him to do a beaver demo at one of these conventions. Like, man, no one's going to come to a beaver demo. Mm-hmm. Can I do coyotes? But every other demo was coyote, you know, because mm-hmm. that's what, you know, they're the big game animal that everybody's curious and struggling with all the time. So mine is purely focused on that. I mean, what I do at Coyote U, it could apply to a fox or really anything. It's the type of thing that you know all about. It's all about the mindset and preparation and focus and determination and drive and all those things that we can't teach anybody, but mm-hmm. you can take that and apply it to anything. You know,
if you put me out there, going in the right way.
That's right. You put me out there with muskrats or coons or mink. I might not be the best now, but I'll figure something out. I'll get in there. You know,
see, my school was more set up for cats and predator work.
Okay,
you know that
control
that,
work.
That's what it was about, the ranches, and then there was about half the guys would come down just wanting to catch a Texas cat.
Yeah,
you know, it was a lot of fun. It's definitely way more work than people realize, keeping up with other adults.
Understood, man. You know, you're a babysitter for a weekend or longer. You know, mine's, you know, it's pretty short. It's 2.5 days. I do Saturdays, kind of a classroom deal, where at our place, we got a pretty nice place in upstate New York, and the first day is kind of classroom, you know, and I call it Coyotes A to Z, but, you know, everything that I talk about, I back it all up with photos or videos or both. I think I have 800 videos and photographs up on a big screen that everything I talk about of what I do, I show these guys that mm-hmm. it really does work. And spend a lot of time on location, guys. It's funny, I send out a questionnaire to everybody, and guy, 99% of the guys that are coming, and again, a lot of them are newer guys, but 99% of them say location is one of the things they struggle with. So I spend a lot of time on that. And then the second day, we actually go out on my line, out to all my farms, which is a challenge, you know, 3 trucks, 13 guys, but my farmers, I've been on these farms 30 years, so they know what I'm doing, and why I'm out there. But I don't leave anything to risk. I like 3 days before I'm going out there, every class I said, don't forget, there's gonna be 3 trucks grabbed across your field on Sunday. But and then the last day is all fur shop stuff, and I think I'm a pretty good coyote trapper, but I know that I'm a really good, I put them up better than anybody. I hate to say it sounds corny, but you can eat off my coyotes when I'm done with them. And a lot of guys come and say, man, that just the fur handling piece alone was worth the price of admission. So I like that too. So, you know, if you're gonna kill them, you might as well put them up right. The way I look at it.
So it's 2.5 days. That's
correct.
That's what it is.
That's right.
And when, what time of year is it?
I do it in October and April. You know, in upstate New York, April and October, I hate to say it, man, those are winter months. and I try to, because we're not trapping, man. I'm setting traps when I show these guys, but I got to snap them off because season's not in. So I'm trying to emulate or replicate actual trapping conditions. You know, if you went out to my place now, it'd be just as hot as it is here today, 90 degrees, and corn would be knee high, and you wouldn't see anything. We'd all be in shorts. Because my wife's like, why don't you do this at a nice time of year? Because every time we do it, the weather's a challenge. But that plays right into my hand. The whole idea of trapping in the Northeast is the rain and the snow and all that type of thing. So I want to take guys out on my line and have the corn already gone. I want the last hay cutting done, and because in 2 weeks from there in October I'll be trapping, and then April is the same exact thing. In April in upstate New York, the snow just melted. They haven't started plowing yet, and it looks like November. It looks like trapping conditions in November. If you were to take a picture, it makes sense that way. Yeah.
Well, I mean, the location thing, I can tell you, when I do YouTube videos, I can do the videos where I'm like a big ape beating on my chest and on the ground, and, you know, have stuff dead laying everywhere. But the videos that always get the most comments and the most traffic are, let's look at this field and talk about how the coyotes are going to move through here, and this is what you need to think about. I'm just standing on my trap line with a cell phone. That's what, I mean, that's, apparently it's harder. And I guess when you've been doing it long enough, you don't see why it's hard anymore.
Understood. And I think sometimes we take that stuff for granted. You know, when I was out with Craig, that was a long time ago, but one of the things I'll never forget him saying, you know, we were looking at all these locations. I'm like, man, how do you pick the one? And he just looked at me and he said, one word, sign. So that's the difference, you know. All these guys that are trying to get into canines, they're probably already they were already muskrat, raccoon, and beaver trappers. And, you know, no offense, but, you know, it's pretty obvious. You see a muddy muskrat run, you plop a conibear in front of you. You see a beaten down raccoon trail, that's the spot. Beavers leave more sign than any animal. Canines in general don't leave that much sign, right? So it's more of a, you look out at a field or you look at a place, and yeah, the guys that know what they're doing will get out and look for tracks. Everybody always watches me when I'm walking. I'm always looking down, man. Mm-hmm. I'm not looking out, I'm looking down. And I'll just catch one little toe pad of a coyote, and that's all. I know what that looks like. Mm-hmm. Sometimes you walk that way, you don't see it. You come back this way and you catch it coming back. The sun's red or whatever. But that all being said, you know, I think the lot of reason that guys that are newer at it struggle because it's not as obvious. And you look out at a field with 100 different crossings and gate openings and pinch points or whatever, and, you know, how do I pick one or two of those, you know?
Well, I know the first time I went to Craig's, I'm reading all the books and all the videos and, you know, going to all the demos, and it was kind of like, well, you pull up in the field and you go run over to the corner, or you look for the road crossing, or you see the lone tree or whatever your, you know, your little fetish is for your location, and you go do it. And then I went out to Craig. I remember the first morning, because it set me back on my heels a little bit. We started driving because there were sheep getting killed, and he knew they were coming from that break. But there was all these little knolls and gaps that they could come through. And I'm thinking Montana, you know, of course he's been trapping there, what, for 30 years by this point. But we pull up to what looks like a great location. We get out, we spend 20 minutes trying to find a track. Couldn't find a track. Get back in the truck, go to the next one, couldn't find the track. Go to the next one, couldn't find the track. Then we hit one track going both ways, and he's like, this is it. You know, but that's not the way we here look at location, because, hey, there's two roads come together up there. Let's go pound a set in.
Yeah. And more than likely there's tracks there.
Yeah. But that was like, I remember that, because now it really makes me nervous not to see signs somewhere. In some places in the East, you can't.
You know, I was one of the... My dogs have, since we last talked, I lost both my dogs. They died in the same year. It kills me, man. But I brought that dog idea back from Craig, and it changed the way I looked at things, man. I'd pull into a spot, you know, and I have a little more confidence now, but... 10, 15 years ago, I'd pull into a spot and I wasn't sure, and I'd let them dogs out. Man, they'd find one turd.
Mm-hmm.
That's all it took, man. I'm getting my equipment. Mm-hmm. It's a game changer to find that one thing. It takes you from guessing that's a good spot to knowing at least something's come through here.
Right.
And granted, one turd or one track isn't a game changer in the East, but when I'm on a new farm and the dogs would find that for me, they would find things I would never see.
Absolutely.
And a lot of times, and that's what got me realizing years and years ago, you know, I see these guys making these scent post set, you know, they got this stick out in the middle of a field, angled back, and a trap in front of it. I've never seen my dogs mark one of them in their life, because they don't exist. Mm-hmm. If it's in a hayfield, the farmers knock them down.
Right.
They do not exist. They might be in the woods. So what my dog showed me from day one was in the East, and I'm sure out west too, but it's these big, large, dark clumps of grass, man, that are in a hayfield or even mm-hmm. sometimes in a corv. That's what the coyotes and fox are marking. The dog's proven it to me a million times. And those became like what I used to call my sleeper set. Yeah, I'd set those. Sometimes I wouldn't even put anything on them. Just Boone and Rusty's pee and whatever was already there before then. Well, it was really cute to see a coyote waiting for you there. But more importantly, knowing that grass stuff was there, that they were marking, or a turd or tracks, that just took it from a maybe to absolutely, let's put some traps in the ground here. And so it takes me from guessing to being a sign trapper, really.
Right. Well, another thing about location that really screwed with my head one day, I think I was in, where was I? I think it was West Tennessee. I was doing a predator job, and it was it's only a 400 or 500 acre place. And 3/4 of that was one field.
Ooh.
But they had old sheep fence. We snare in Tennessee.
Mm-hmm.
So I do what makes sense, and I go all the way around that fence, and every time I see a crawl under or what could be a crawl under, I'm hanging a snare. Well, then I start picking up coyotes. And it hit me one day, you see the hare coming through the fence. Now, we know locations, right? I mean, you know, we're the professionals.
Understood.
And then you start looking around this field, and there's a coyote in a snare with sign on there that I cannot come up with any reason why he's there or where he's going. And it started like eating at my stomach, going, I don't know anything about these. I mean, I would never set for that cat, that coyote there, because I can't figure out why he's here. There he sits, you know.
But I know exactly what you're talking about. Like, my locations are your locations. They're pinch points. They're crossings. There's, you know, spokes on the wheel. Everything comes together. But every time I see a coyote, is out in the middle of a hayfield with none of those travel, just yeah. out in the middle of a field. I'm like, what are you doing out there?
Right.
No
right.
place I'd ever set a. Now he's out there mousing or doing what he's doing, you know. So I guess I'm catching traveling coyotes. But it's the same. I know exactly what you're talking about. But, you know, you think you got this figured out. I'm like, what the heck is he doing out there? You know.
A couple of years ago, I was down with Chip Davis on his farm, and we were just hogging deer hunting, and I'm coming off a stand, and here comes a coyote. And down in Mississippi, they're huge fields. I'm 3,000, 4,000 acres. They're big fields.
Whoa.
And here comes this coyote, which is really cool. So I throw up my AR because it's got a big scope on it, and I just watch that thing. And my brain's like trying to be like, okay, what data can I pick up from this type thing? And basically the data said, you don't know shit. That's what because he didn't go where I thought he would go. He didn't do what I thought he would do. He didn't travel the way I thought he would travel. But there sat a live coyote coming across the field for no reason whatsoever that I could figure up. You know, when he heard the vehicle, then he started acting the way that I thought that he would act.
Right.
But when he was out just, you know, doing his thing, I was like, you're not supposed to. That makes no sense whatsoever.
You know, I always tell guys, it's like trapping cars. You know, if you want to catch coyotes, you're better off setting like where four or five roads meet if you wanted to trap cars. But every now and then, man, there's just a car driving through the middle of the field. I don't get it either, man. Look at that guy out there driving through the field. I guess I'm off on this one. But no, I think that's what's fun about this, right? None of us have it figured out. I mean, it's funny you mentioned Chip Davis. I, you know, the Big Pan thing, you know, again, going way back to Sterling and before that, the Big Pans. But I use a steel screen on my Jake trap. Mm-hmm. I hate steel screen, man. I use it, but I hate it. I'll tell everybody in the world to listen, but I can't argue with its benefits. But I hate cutting it. I hate everything about it. So that being said,
get you a Big Pan, weld it on. You
well, yeah.
With it
so I said, you know what? I talked to him at the NTA last year, and I got some Big Pans, and I did 13 of them. I don't even know why we came up with that number. I think that's what he sent me, a baker's dozen. And I liked them enough that now I have five dozen. And it's not, I'm not really trying to increase that kill area or do what most people are thinking. I'm just trying to get rid of that steel screen to support my mm-hmm. grass for my pipe set.
That's exactly where I came from. I was the steel screen that guy too.
Yeah. So what's funny about it is Chip, he's a great guy. And I told him, I called him up. I said, you know, is there any way we can make these pans rougher, you know, like sandpaper, because my grass is washing off in the rain and stuff, you know, steel screen it kind of grabs.
Mm-hmm.
And he says to me, man, you know, this is genuine trapper ingenuity, he says, well, I could just, when I cut them, I can just lay them down there on the floor and just have all my slop and splatter cover them up. I said, that sounds cool. He charged me double for them, son of a guns. No, I'm joking. But no, so now I get these pans that are covered in splatter.
Hey, he's selling value, not the cost.
He's a smart guy, man. I'm going to get Zagger on this one. But I told him, I said, I was going to take them out and put them on my gun range and shoot them with birdshot. And that's what I was picturing. Like, the rain would go through it, but then all those little, for lack of a better word, banana peels.
How come you just don't get the peel and stick sandpaper?
I should do something like that. I need something. I want them to be a little rougher because it does wash off in the rain. But that all being said, for me to go from 13 of them to five dozen, it's working. I like the
how
deep
are you putting your traps? Because I normally don't see that.
So that's the problem. So my trap, I dig a bed like 4 or 5 inches deep, but then the trap's up on top of the ground and the sod. The levers. The bed's perfectly square because the Jake's perfectly square, but the levers don't allow it to fall down in that hole. So the levers are up top. I pound with my hammer, I pound at 3 o'clock and 9 o'clock an indentation for the levers to countersink that trap. So now the trap jaws are down below the surface, they're countersunk ever so slightly, and then I use my hammer to pinch that into place. So that trap's floating like this. So it's up on top. It ain't deep at all with that pipe set.
My dirt
holes aren't that way, but... And I'm in a sod field, and I'm covering that with, you know, grass from my yard or chopped up hay or something. And when the rain comes, on that steel screen, the water goes right through, and it really just sticks nice to that steel screen. It looks great. It looks like a place in any hayfield in America where they left a little bit of grass, or you know, the chopper mm-hmm. didn't catch it, or the baler didn't catch it. It's a perfect place to step. And it's almost like a little bit of a guide. You know, you got this big grass tuft, and you got this little square cut out where there's just a little, you know, it's not hay or stubble. It's just a perfect flat place. So I like the way that the grass, after a rain, grabs that steel screen. So I'm monkeying around with this the bigger pan to try to figure out a way to get to do that, just that very thing.
Well, I know that I had a belt sander one time that had a round disc that I never used, but it came with these round discs of sandpaper that had a pill and stick, and you would stick it on there and it would spin, and you're supposed to do something with it. I'm not mechanical, so I never mess with it, but I would say those aren't that expensive. You get like a real heavy grip, just slap it on there.
It makes sense. You know, I think the upshot to all this is, you know, all of us guys have been doing this for a long time. We're still willing to experiment, try new things, and see what works. And there's something maybe better or different, and I'll try anything, you know. I mean, I have things that I know work for me, but if someone tells me something that I respect, I'll try it, man. I'll try it for sure.
So what you said that some guys are doing some things with your pipe set where they're a little confused. So why don't we try to clarify some of those?
Yeah, you know, when I wrote that article, I did a second article, kind of lessons learned and some different things. But, you know, the two biggest things that guys do with that set is I don't look at that pipe set as a visual set. When I make one, when I walk away from it, after about 10 feet, I can't see that pipe anymore. I want to bury that thing down in a grass tuft. And it's not that I think a coyote would be afraid of it. I don't look at it as a visual set. It's really just a lure receptacle, bait receptacle, and it's something that keeps my stink up off the ground, period. So, and that's why I always tell guys, I still think a dirt hole is a better set, purely for the visual part of it. You know, if you set on a two-track and you dig a dirt hole and you throw that dirt across the road, the wind can be blowing the wrong way, but he's going to see that thing when he's walking down it, right?
Except for weather.
Right. Unless it's covered with snow or something. But, mm-hmm. you know, and on a regular, you know, during fall trapping or spring or whatever it is, usually they're going to see that. The way I make my pipe, they won't necessarily see that. So a lot of guys are sending me pictures or videos and their pipe sticking out of the ground 7, 8, 9 inches. And I was guilty. When I first started playing around with this, I thought maybe a coyote's going to be terrified of a piece of plastic. And in hindsight, now it's hilarious I would ever think that. But I think it still works better when you just hide that thing, mm-hmm. you know? And so I think most guys were leaving the pipe out too far. Guys were using white, all these different colors. I just use the gray, you know, Schedule 40 electrical conduit. And it's not the ideal color. I probably wouldn't mind it to be a little darker, but I buried that thing down in there. You know, it's kind of neat when a coyote walks up to it and finally looks down at it and gets ready to bite it or lick it, or they might see the black hole. Mm-hmm. And there's a little bit of a visual there, but by then I should have them, you know, so it doesn't matter anymore. But
well, that sounds a lot like when you look at the old woofers and stuff, like when they do a T-bone, they just don't stick it out there in front of God and everybody. They hide most of it. Or when they do a skull, it's just like the nose sticking up out of the dirt. And I think the intrigue is what's...
I think you're right about that. When I first started doing T-bone sets, man, I had them things sticking out of the ground. And now if you saw a T-bone set of mine, man, I had that thing pounded all the way down flat, right. and maybe in a grass tuff and covered up mostly, you know, mm-hmm. and just a little bit of it showing. So, you know, that's probably one of the biggest things. Then the other thing, and you know, guys, especially newer guys, and maybe even older guys, give coyotes way too much credit. And when I walk away from my sets, if I look straight down through that grass, I can still see little bits of the steel screen, maybe even a little bit of the trap. That's how little grass I use. Guys use way too much grass because I got to hide this trap from the coyote. He's going to know what it is. Their eyes aren't even there, man. When they get there, and if you get something good, if you have something good in that pipe that they want to eat or bite or lick or chew or roll on or whatever, I think they put their focus on that, and they're not really looking where they're stepping. But what happens, and I say that, I'm not talking about trapping in Texas or even Kansas. I'm talking about New York. If you put a half inch of grass on top of a trap, it's probably going to get rained on, mm-hmm. and that's going to freeze, or it's going to get snowed on. So the whole idea of that pipe dream set is that trap's up on top of the ground. The levers are not impeded by anything except by a little bit of grass. There's no dirt on top of a jaws. It's pinched in from the side, and it's counterintuitive to put a half inch or an inch of material on top of it, and especially with steel screen.
You get caught up in the scissors of where everything comes together on the jaws and the levers.
I call it a taco, man. With that steel screen and those levers, if you have too much stuff, that you fold that thing up, and you got a perfect taco, and you don't have a coyote.
Right.
And you're talking to a guy that's guilty of having done that. You know.
Oh, me too.
You know. The thing with the pipe set, or pipe dream as I call it, the pipe was the last thing I added to it. I've been bedding traps in New York for 20 years the way I do it, with the grass and the steel screen and the hammer method. But I was using the or a grab and die, you know, or a grub stake, or a piece of bamboo, or whatever it was. And or even just the sleeper set my dogs would find, you know, where the cows were marking. The pipe was the last addition to it, and it's a number of things.
But that's what people focus on.
That's right. They think, you know, it's a pipe. It's all about the pipe. It isn't about the pipe. The pipe is the latest addition, and the reason a pipe in my mind is better than a T-bone or a piece of bamboo. I can get it. It's cheap. It's readily available, and it's reusable. And yeah, you've had T-bones carried off by other coyotes. You've
Absolutely.
Had them eaten by the coyote in the trap. Like, where'd my T-bone go? You know, I think a lot of times, man, you see them. It's flipped outside the catch circle 5 or 6 feet, and the next guy comes in and just grabs it because your stink's still in there, right?
Mm-hmm.
They take it, the greedy son of guns. They don't care about their buddy.
No.
So I'm out of here, man. But with the pipe, they're usually still there. They're 9 inches long, 9-10 inches long, and 6 or 7 inches are underground, and it takes. It's hard to get them out, and that's the whole idea. You know, if the wind's wrong, they come in the backside of it, and they're pulling on that sucker, and then they're going to eventually come around. You know,
because the leverage is wrong.
That's right. That's exactly right. I angle it slightly, so if this is my trap, you know, I'm kind of like this. So if the wind's coming this way and they come in this way, it's just going to be really comfortable for them to work their way around here, and I'll eventually get them, I think. But the other thing guys do wrong is they use gland lure only in that pipe because they're fox trappers or whatever, and they catch every red fox in America. That's not the reaction you want. You want what I just said, man. You want them to have something in that pipe that they want and got to get and will spend time doing. And if you just put gland lure only or urine only, you might just get a reaction of lifting a leg and going or squatting and going. And if the wind's wrong, I mean, it's too short of a time. There's not a lot of foot guiding with this set.
Mm-hmm.
And like a dirt hole, steep, you know, step down. So I'm relying on something really good in that pipe. It's M44 type logic. It's something
right.
that they want, and they want to lick or bite or pull and chew and something that tastes good. I really have found that, and you're a lure maker, you would know. You probably have stuff that you think, golly, of all the stuff I make, there's probably some things that taste like dreck. That's Slovenian for you know what.
Mm-hmm.
Or there's things that might taste good to them, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And I have found, and other guys have found, that even something as simple as bacon grease, you put something there they want, and they want more of it, you know, they will stay there and work at that son of a gun, just like they would in a dirt hole set.
Yeah,
know?
Well, I got a lot of USDA guys that use Federales for their M44s out west, and I never thought it because I don't use them. And I think when most people here smell Federales, it smells kind of like a tainted beef jerky is what it actually smells like, you know, and then from what you're saying, you know, because if they're pulling it out there, they'll pull it anywhere. But it's not like a gator bait, you know, or a primal paste bait or something like that, where it's just a different, it's almost like a hyper food type thing without all the taint and all the different casters, and it's just totally different products.
You know, I wouldn't begin, you know, I think you've seen a million people open up your jars and right in front of you, and they smell, and that smells good or bad. I mean, I'm not sure we really know. We know what we think is going to work, but,
right.
you know, something that might taste good to a coyote, how do I know? Man, they eat things that make a billy goat puke.
Right.
So
right.
I imagine there's some things out there that you and I think wouldn't taste good that a coyote's pretty cool with, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But that all being said, you know, if...
I think the biggest thing would be to find baits that don't have... like synthetic egg, shellfish, stuff that's so corrosive.
Right.
I can't imagine anybody. Like I've tried, I taste test when I get oils in new ones. First thing I do for coon lures is stick my and put it on my tongue. Some of that stuff that smells so good. Oh my gosh. I mean, you just think someone dumped battery acid in your mouth and you're like.
this guy over there in the building I'm at selling the coon bait. I opened it up the other day. It's got marshmallow and stuff in it. I was going to pour some milk over it. Look like a churn. Man, it smelled good to me, but you're probably right. It probably tastes like dleck, you know. It's just like, but man, I know what you're saying. So I don't know that I can judge what a kai would like the flavor, but that's where a lot. I have
that's
a buddy.
Just testing.
That's right. A guy I know, he put a pipe out and he put some stuff in it for 3 months. You can't believe what happened with that pipe. And I asked him what he put in. He said bacon grease. I said, well, there you go. Mm-hmm. You know, and I don't want to oversimplify lure and bait, but that's a really extreme example of something I think, I mean, you put a pipe out with bacon grease, you'll probably catch me in it. You know, I like that stuff too. But there's probably a lot of, I mean, every lure and bait maker probably have something that probably fits that category.
I would say so.
You know?
Even if they don't know it.
They don't know, they probably have
it. Yeah, they probably do.
Because guys always want to know what I use, and I tell them, I show them. And I'm a firm believer, and again, sitting in front of a lure and bait maker, I never look at that as a silver bullet. I never have. You know, the baits and lures that I use work in my system. I like stuff that's so thin you can squirt it out like out of a urine bottle, or so thick it's like peanut butter. What I don't like, because I'm always in a hurry, I'm sloppy, I'm fast, and I don't like runny, chunky lures, man, because I'm dripping those on my patterns and things like that. Mm-hmm. And that's, I'm not a human scent guy. I don't care about anything, but I do not want that stink on my pattern. Mm-hmm. I want it all in that pipe or in that dirt hole. And I'm in a hurry, and I'm rocking and rolling, and man, I grab something out of with these runny, chunky things, and I'm dripping stuff, and it just doesn't mean it's not great stuff. It just doesn't fit my program. So
right.
When guys give me stuff, I'm like, man, I want it to be like peanut butter. I want it to, you could slap it on a bridge wall, and it'd stay there. That's kind of stuff I like, man. It's just my, I'm always in a hurry, and I'm fumbling around, and I'm trying to get, you know, I'm all about miles and traps, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And I ain't worried about one set, I'm worried about 100, just like you would be if you're trying to get as many out as you could, and that just fits my system better, man. Squirt and go, or slap and go, you know.
Well, what else have you noticed that people may be confused on your set? Is that the main thing?
Those things are probably the main things. Too much grass, you know, too much pipe sticking out. You know, when I wrote that article, trappers are just classic, and they're always trying to innovate and change things. And before guys even tried it, they were emailing me asking if they could change it. I'm like, do whatever you want, man. But why don't you try it the way I'm showing you? Then tweak it a little bit, you know? I always tell people, we all learn how to drive. We go to driving school, we learn how to drive the way the book tells us, and after that we develop our own style, you know?
Right.
And I think it's a little bit like that, but if you haven't tried it and you've never done it, then why not start with at least the way the guy that has done it for several years tries it? But
you get some, yeah.
Then ask.
Totally get what you're saying.
No, I think it's amazing. I've had guys walk up to me that have gone 100% to pipes. And I've had guys walk up to me and say, man, it just doesn't work for me. And if I listen to a guy long enough, I know you've heard this a million times, man. As soon as I talk to a guy for 5 seconds or 5 minutes, I can tell they don't have the right mindset, man. They're defeatist, you know. Mm-hmm. Anytime someone says something doesn't work in my area, then I throw a flag on that play.
Mm-hmm.
Coyotes don't work dirt holes in my area. What the heck are you talking about? You know, they all get together tonight, listen, man. No one work a dirt hole in this area. Yeah, I mean, you're kidding me? It's just, but I hear that kind of stuff all the time, man. If something doesn't work in my area, no, you used such a small sample of that pipe or your bait or your lure that you never gave it a chance, and it didn't work for you in the first 3 seconds, and you don't think it works in your area. You know, some guys are, man, they're just so narrow minded, and
well, I think human nature, certain people want to be able to tell someone like you that you're not right.
That's true.
You know, and another thing, like I got a text this morning. We just got, apparently, I didn't know this because I'm a hermit, but we just got TS-85s legal in Tennessee, which are the big beaver traps for Kyle.
Nice.
And then there's a bunch of trappers that are throwing a fit over it. It's only for the water, but they're throwing a fit. Well, what if some goofball, and this was the quote, what if some goofball sets it on the ground and this, that, and the other? And I'm reading that, and I'm like, they don't like big traps, and this is their way of justifying it. You know, so if someone doesn't like the idea of using the pipe, they're going to come up with a reason why your system won't work. Or
you're totally right.
Because I hear that on portable pockets all the time, and I'm like, are you sure that you actually used one? I mean, your kid can catch a coyote like that. I mean, it's pretty simple.
It's like when somebody gives me a bottle of lure or bait to try. They hand me a 1 ounce bottle. I just hand it back to them. Like, you really want me to test this stuff? Give me a pint of this stuff, man. I ain't gonna know in 1 ounce. Give me a break. But no, it is funny though. There's so much of that, and these guys are defeatists, and that's why, you know, your book, you know, it's. it takes a certain individual to become one of those one percenters, and most of these guys, I hate to say it, man, they're not. They come to my demo, they come to your demo, they go to your school and read your book, and they're looking for something easy and simple. There's just no easy, simple way about this. If I see a guy tomorrow with 1,200 muskrats, I mean, hats off. Yeah, muskrats are easy to catch, but not 1,200 of them, mm-hmm. or 800 coon, or 100 bobcats, or whatever it is, man. Any big catch of fur is just nothing about, it's just hard work. There's no luck involved in it. I joke around with my buddies that shoot a deer, and they take 1,000 pictures of it like this and that, and they never saw that deer in their life. Mm-hmm. You know, and I take some time and put together barn pictures, which we like and do, and man, there's no luck involved in that. Sure, you could have some good weather, mm-hmm. you know, one year versus the other, but man, there's no lucky thing about catching 150 coyotes in New York.
It's funny you're saying that. Jeff did an auto demo here. And I asked him how it went, and he said, well, I had some strange looks in about 2 minutes in. And I'm like, what did you say? He said, I'm letting everybody know now, just because you catch an otter in a beaver set does not make you an otter trapper.
Right.
No more than if you find a diamond ring in the plumbing of your sink, are you a diamond miner.
Yeah, I like that. Great analogy. That's perfect. Yeah. I mean, think about mink and cotton muskrat sets. Probably more than in actual mink sets. So, yeah, it's right. It's the same kind of thing. But I can tell, man, that, you know, guys that come to my school or my demos, you know, a lot of these guys have been doing this for a long time, and they read the same books you and I did, man, where we were dyeing wax in our trucks and two sets of setting equipment and rubber boots for gas stations and all that stuff. And it takes time and miles and experience to recognize that not all that is necessarily true. And when I start telling people not to worry about human odor or whatever, their arms crossed. I read body language, man. They go from being, they cross their arms, and they're already throwing a flag on that play. They're like, man, this guy's all washed up. And I'm like, I'm telling you, you're asking me what I do, and I'm trying to explain this to you, and you're already on the defense about it, you know? They have something in their mind that, no, man, you can't, you know, they're wearing chest waders to their sets and all this stuff, man. You want to sweat on a set, wear chest waders to it.
I had a guy show up to buy a lure in chest waders.
Hey, I like that.
You know, I mean, I didn't know what to say.
Maybe he was taking it right on the beaver line, right?
I don't know. I mean, it's just, you know, but talking about human scent, since you went to Craig, you'll understand this, because I was in that mindset, because you're reading all that stuff, and you know, you got to go pee 16 miles away from your set because nothing ever pees in that area unless you do it, you right. know, that type thing. And I watched him catch a porcupine, which I've never been around porcupines before, but it was on that 7 day check. It's been there for 7 days. It was 100 degrees. And he has those gloves that he had on, and I mean, taking that trap off what was left of the leg, and it was goop that was a purplish color, which I don't know how a porcupine can look that color. And they had all them quills, and he pushed with his gloves, and then he scratched the trap in the dirt, same gloves on, set the trap back, and we had a coyote there the next trip.
Sure,
and I was like, yeah, I ain't worried about that other stuff no more.
You know, it just takes that. You just have to see it for yourself. You know, every time when I was younger and I'd be making a set and a farmer would come down and want to talk to me, I'd panic, man. He'd get out of the tractor and spit in the pan. Oh, man. Then the next day you got a double. You know?
Right.
I live in Amish country. One of my best stories was I was making some sets, and all of a sudden, when school, Amish kids all go to the same school, and all of a sudden, come on over the hill, looks like something out of a movie, comes about 30 Amish kids, every size, and you can imagine, down to 4-year-old all the way up to teenagers. Boy, they come right up to me, and they're talking to me and hanging around. I'm like, this is a disaster. Next day, you know what happened. Double on coyotes or whatever it was, you know. So I think it just, there's probably places, you know, maybe when you were in Alaska, maybe in the Adirondack Mountains, where they don't see humans that much. But to think that a coyote would be terrified of petroleum smells or tobacco smells or rust, you know. Every coyote in America I know runs under barbed wire fences and leaves some hair there, right? Like your fence thing you told me about. To think that they'd be terrified of that type of stuff, let alone human odor, it really is counterintuitive when you really think about it. Man, they'd be more nervous than they already were if they were that way.
Well, I catch a lot of coyotes in Texas in the used well pipes that they stack up, because it's a perfect little thing. I can shove bait in there and put a trap in front of it. It smells like oil, and it's 20 foot of metal.
Yeah, they come, but they see them all the time. They're used to them, and they're, right. Wow, there's something good smelling in there. Let's check this out. You know, it's kind of funny, because sometimes, you know, you're in the business and maybe selling instruction or selling books and DVDs, and I have coyote you now. So you don't want to oversimplify it and make it sound like, you know, this is ridiculous. This is not that hard. But I think by letting people know that they're worrying about the wrong thing, man.
That's
you know,
exactly.
If you just will forget the human odor thing and just get down the road and set 20 more traps, I promise you, the law of averages are going to catch up, and you're going to catch more fur. That's just the way it is, you know. And you know, when guys tell me they only set 12 traps last year, well, and they didn't do that well, this year set 36. You know, and I'm not saying just to set them willy nilly, you know, but I can guarantee you, when I look at 80 traps, I catch a different number of casts than when I look at 180.
Yes.
You know, it's percentages. It's all that stuff. And there's Dunlap. We were out late last night.
Mm. Well, you look fairly spry then.
Yeah, I'm used to getting up and going out late and coming getting up early, so this works out perfect for me. So, well, no, we had a good time last night.
Well, any last words? Because I think the buildings are going to be open.
Buildings are open. No, I appreciate this, and it's always good to see you. I'm glad we kissed and made up and whatever is going on there. But no, like I said, man, if you want to learn to catch cats, they're the hot ticket item, and I really want some. I'm a patient man. This is the first, I've been trapping cats 30 years, and for the first time ever, they're the thing to have.
Mm-hmm.
Man, I've been patient. But
well, how do people find you to get in contact with you?
I have a website. It's coyoteu.com, www.coyoteu.com. My email is mark@coyoteu.com, and then you can start there. I have phone number 215-415-9286. But I do two or three classes a year. I do 12 guys at a time. So
since you're giving all that, bank account number?
Yeah, a bank account. You'd have to get with Gina Zagger for that. Exactly. But no, man, it's good seeing you, and this has been a good convention, and it's always fun, so I appreciate the time.
All right, appreciate it.